Hi, I'm Steve.
How's it? I'm Samon.
And welcome to the Business and Beers podcast. Hey guys, welcome to episode 2 of Business and Beers. We're all out of lockdown, so it will be our first episode that we
actually have beers.
Yeah, we actually have beers, which is amazing. Without further ado, I'd like to introduce our first guest, and his name is Grant Grief. And yeah, just to get us started, Grant, tell us a little bit about yourself. And then, yeah, tell us one thing that not very many people know about Grant.
Hey guys, thanks so much for having me. Really, really a privilege. Okay, so just a bit about me. My name, like you said, is Grant. I'm actually from the Eastern Cape, but spent most of my education and life in Cape Town. And I'm a qualified CASA by background, but I've been very much involved in starting my own startups and really getting involved in specifically the hospitality industry. And lately, I've now jumped into the logistics side with our new technology company. And if I were to think of something that someone does not know about me, or a few do, I did Corset 2 matric. I didn't do Afrikaans, so I do not understand any Afrikaans, yet my surname is Grief, but I do speak Corset to everyone that I can possibly speak it with, and try to keep it going, because, you know, if you don't speak a lot, then you kind of lose the grammar or the vocab. So yeah, that's something I think not a lot of people know.
That must be quite funny. Like, honestly, how many conversations have you caught where guys have been speaking Khoza behind your back and you like replying Khoza?
many. But it's also a great actually opportunity to be in a position where you can actually earn someone's respect, because I think that's a lot of the times where I've been in an environment or a situation where I first said, you know, India Konda, like, which means like I'm understanding. And then at first someone will go, oh, I'm sure they just learned a couple of words. But yeah, then when you continually chat, then someone realizes that you've actually taken the time to really understand and to learn. And for me, that's just been the fun part of it. And of course, with my team, the individuals that speak closer, like, it just has been a great time for me to also learn more as well, which is great.
Yeah, I think that with like South Africa having such diverse cultures and stuff like that, I mean, for me, I think that's one of the biggest regrets I've had personally coming out of school, is not like learning, if you could call it in inverted commas, like a traditional language. Because if you look at it, I think with the diverse cultures that we have, you kind of get stuck into, most people have to either speak English or Afrikaans. But yeah, I think especially in that like cultural heritage, if you can actually speak the guy's language, exactly like you say, it's a huge respect factor. And, you know, we're actually joking about it last night with a couple of mates that work out, I think it's Northern Cape or something like that. And the cultures are all like heavy Afrikaans. And it's so funny that when you speak to these heavy Afrikaans people and you start the conversation in Afrikaans, you might sound like an absolute clown, like this broken Afrikaans oak doesn't know what you're saying. But it's that whole respect thing, and you actually see the whole demeanor of the guy drop completely, and he actually opens up because you're trying to speak his language and engage with him. And it's that whole, like, you know, bringing everything down to mutual ground, which, yeah, it's incredible.
And also Nelson Mandela had that incredible quote with speaking to a person in a language that they understand versus speaking to a person in their language. You know, that goes to the heart. I think that's the quote, but ultimately that really is what I've personally learned, and I'm so grateful to the school that I went to that actually took the first steps to make this you know, possible for me to have taken it, because I learned an incredible amount, and I've got a huge amount of respect now for learning a new language, as well as actually appreciating within South Africa specifically, just how incredible the language, you know, is that each specific culture has. And we've got a massive amount of different languages, which is actually an incredible opportunity for people to learn.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, couldn't agree more. And yeah, I think leading up to this episode and the recording, and, you know, when we're kind of plotting down for this podcast and like who we're going to chat to and kind of put everything down, you know, the very first person that struck to my mind, like I said to Steve, we have to get Grant into this episode. You know, we had a couple of brief chats, and I think it just goes to show how quickly life has changed. I mean, we were, when was it? I think it was around March. I'll never forget. I mean, we met down at that little market down at V&A, and it was incredible. Like, tasting that coffee, I mean, that the coffee we got was sensational. Going, walking around all those little vendors that homemade breads and meats and stuff like that. And, you know, it was just incredible to see this like environment for small businesses and business owners. I know we were chatting, you know, even getting your own store there with Persia's company that did like the honey products. And then also your own company coming off of the high with that Rafa Nadal and Roger Federer match, you know, you guys did the catering there. And it's almost like, wow, like everything's going absolutely incredible. And then boom, all of a sudden we get hit with this COVID and like things almost took a complete 180. I was, you know, just chatting with Steve and chatting with a few other people. I think we don't actually realize the biggest impact of what that had. I mean, for me personally, and I mean, you can probably echo that being on the ground, but I would imagine that a lot of those smaller vendors in that market, I mean, a lot of those people have actually had to shut doors because they don't have anybody coming in. And a lot of that was like a real tourist hub where a lot of different cultures, different languages, different people are rolling through and getting exposed to these small businesses. But I think the biggest question is, you know, the more people we chat to, we start realizing the impact of COVID. So, I mean, from your business coming off of this high from this massive tennis match, I mean, having that on your company's name is like completely next level. Like, what happened with your business when COVID hit?
Yeah, so I think, so just a bit of background about the business. So we were an event, it was an event hiring company. And so what we would do is provide products for hire and then collect them when they're done after an event. So that could literally be a birthday party, or it could be, you know, something like a massive stadium event, like we did the tennis match at the Cape Town Stadium. And we, you know, we had grown the business to such an extent where it was very much positioned on a long-term strategy. We were literally within the third year, and we, in February was our best month. We had really got a great traction, and everything was really working smoothly from the foundations that we had, you know, set, and the incredible team that we had, and the great culture that had really just blended well together. So from when COVID hit, or we call it hit, when that announcement happened, when the lockdown happened, we very much were in a position to completely stop the business. All revenue stopped, and our business was a relatively big business. So what I mean by that is we had a high degree of operating leverage. So there were high fixed costs. And so when you're in a business like that and there is zero revenue coming in, there's only so many costs that you can cut back on. And I think that really was something I'm so grateful for the team, for what they did right in that beginning phase. But we got to a position where in June, we actually then had to file for liquidation for the company.
Jeez.
And that was a put it this way, over the last 6 months it has been an incredible time, but an incredible time of highs and very, very low lows. So I look back and what has happened, it really made me reflect on what is failure. Because of course we like to define success and again, this is a subjective matter, but for me, I had to look at it from a failure stance and say, well, what is my definition of failure? Because if my definition, on the easier scale, i.e. a loss of a company, or, you know, you make a loss or you lose money, well, yeah, then I definitely did fail. But from a personal reflection over this time now, and I think a lot of people are in this position now because of such an uncontrollable factor that has put really good businesses in positions where they either have had to retrench their team members, or they've actually had to take that severe step of closing down.
Yeah.
So for me, failure, what I landed on was the fact that if I don't do something to the best of my possible ability, then I failed.
Yeah.
And you know, after reflecting over this experience, which I did not think that I would be experiencing at the age of 29, yeah. But I realized that I did give, and I continue to give to the best of my ability. And one of the biggest things for me is culture. One of the key things that we built within our business was culture, really prioritizing that. And it was based on the belief that no one can empower someone else.
Yeah.
We can only create an environment with the right tools, space, and feedback that allows the people within it to empower themselves.
Yeah.
You have to be able to grab a tool and actually start using it.
Yeah.
You have to be able to empower yourself. But the environment directly influences that ability for you to empower yourself. And so that's what we did in the business.
And I think maybe people don't understand that, because that's like such a fine line. I mean, you're saying, okay, cool, you know, the business was a super high, doing extremely well, and COVID got announced. So, okay, cool, there must have been cash. Like, if I understand correctly, you guys went from literally doing extremely well to making zero money. Like, the moment COVID was announced, your funds that are coming into the business goes from whatever, you know, X amount to zero, pretty much, I can't even say overnight, in a second. The moment Ramaphosa said we're shutting down, you oaks were like, boom, okay, there goes our business, pretty much.
Yeah, well, I think that we noticed it 2 weeks before. So we noticed it actually 2 weeks before the announcement, when cancellations started coming, and a lot of the people were international customers or clients. So they had already experienced lockdowns, or they had already experienced other, call it global news. And so that was a signal that was being sent, and all the cancellations, and then our local events companies that would hire from us, they then were canceling with us because their clients were canceling. And so it was that type of effect. So it happened 2 weeks before, the catalyst happened 2 weeks before of everything. And then when that final blow happened, you know, there is zero revenue, and then you immediately start hemorrhaging money because you know, money's going out and no money's coming in, and you've got your rent and you've got your finance agreements for our trucks and our vehicles. And I'll reiterate that when we started the business, we had acquired an existing hiring business, and we really just wanted to expand and grow the business quite aggressively. And so we'd invested a lot of money in that, in building that foundation, or in laying that foundation. So our year three that we were in literally was the year for us to start now to earning that return of that investment. And so this year, actually 2020, was the year where we really had budgeted to earn that return to start off, because, you know, you're not dealing with a short-term space here. Our ambition was very, very long-term, towards, you know, 10 years. And we really just started the process of reaping those rewards, and unfortunately we were in that position which we did not predict.
Yeah. My question just goes around, Grant, are you, you know, you obviously just explained that you've just acquired a business and all of that, which is amazing, and like you say, now was the money time, if we can call it that. Did you have a leadership team? You've obviously explained to us how important culture was to you, so did you have a leadership team, or your group of directors, or was this now all fallen onto Grant's shoulders? And if that's the case, then we'll have a part two of the question, yeah, of what was going through your mind, because obviously these things are difficult, and it's easier if you have a group of people, but what did your leadership look like when this was all happening?
Yeah, and I think in terms of what was going on the mind, like to echo what Steve's saying, and it's something that we chatted about in our first podcast, and something which it kind of like grated me when I heard the statement. And I think until you're in that actual situation, and that's why we really wanted to chat, is because you've been in the situation and you understand that. But a lot of people are saying, well, great, if you're a small company, and you know, in your size, in your terms, you're not a small company, you guys were a large enterprise like in that space. But if you can't see it through COVID and you don't have enough money in savings, you know, then either you guys aren't planning or you didn't like predict this. And it's like, how do you combat that exactly? Like, what goes through your mind? Like, how do you rescue the business? What do you do? I mean, it must have been like 5 million thoughts rushing in your head at once. Like, how do we resuscitate this business that's dying in front of us? And you know, you've got a ton of lives that are dependent on what you guys are giving them in terms of like income and a salary and all of this. Like, yeah.
Okay, so I think in terms of the leadership side, there's no way that anyone can take on a venture, can do anything, actually, in my opinion, without a support structure and without a team. Whether you are conscious of it or not, there's always someone normally involved in supporting you or in at least guiding you, or in one way or another. It could even be a customer, for example. Yeah. And for me, I had Chase, and he was our COO, and he is a really, really great guy and a smart guy, and really just having him there and being able to bounce those ideas on while this called COVID environment happened helped a lot. And then we also have an investor that you know is in his 50s and really just has seen, you know, lots of different scenarios of businesses that have closed and not closed and grown and not grown. And so we did have that, but at the same time, for me as the CEO of the company, my responsibility was to serve my team. And that's, I always believe that is it's not for me to serve the customers, actually, it's for me to serve my team and for them then to be able to be in a better position to serve the customer. So my first priority was communicating everything with my team. From when we first knew it, we sat down with everyone and we explained everything. I explained how much money was in the bank. I explained how much you know, money that normally we would spend on, which they already knew because we had monthly meetings. And in that time, we also mustn't forget that their families or friends were in other companies, and so everyone talked.
Yeah.
And for me, So they also were hearing what other companies were doing. And I know another company within our industry that they immediately retrenched 80% of their employees.
Sure.
And so that, call it, sends a ripple effect across. But we sat with our team as a priority. We shared with them what we were going to do. And we shared basically we were vulnerable to our team, and we said, like, this is what we believe that we're going to do. We're going to do our best to not retrench anyone, and we're not going to be reckless about this. So it was great to receive the support from my team, and it was great to receive also ideas. And there were incredible things that the team came up with that I didn't even come up with, that we got rid of certain costs, that we came up with certain approaches to how to maybe delay some payments. So I think for me, the priority was the team. And then the thoughts that were going through my mind, you know, like I said, it's like the team. I don't want to let down my team. I don't want to be in a position, because as the CEO, you're there to serve your team, and you're there, like I said before, where my opinion of what you really focus on a daily basis is creating the most optimal environment to allow your team members to empower themselves and ultimately thrive. So now, and one component of that is, of course, making it safe.
Yeah.
So now this environment actually was being threatened, and it was not safe anymore as we would hope it to be. And so that really got to me. And like people say, that entrepreneurship or being in business where you have that sort of responsibility is, it's like a bipolar type of setting where you literally are extremely high and then you're extremely low. And then when you think things are going well, and then all of a sudden it's not. And this was then a very low. And we just went into the actionable steps, and we just did what we were able to do within the controllable factors that we were faced with.
And just quickly, you did briefly mention it, but was there any support or any emails or anything coming from customers during this time? Or do you think everyone, I found with my customers, it kind of felt like every man for themselves.
It's actually interesting you mentioned that. And I think what we did was, and this actually came from an idea from one of our team members when we had that session, call it a crisis meeting. Mm-hmm. We sat down and we then of course looked at ways and how we can get through this. But one of the key things that I then did on behalf of the team is I sent out communication to all of our customers.
Okay.
Saying that, you know, this is what's happening, this is what we're doing. And then over the next weeks and months, any experience that I had that showed some positivity, for example, being call it partially successful with the UIF TERS, I then sent our business customers, I sent them an email explaining exactly what I did. And I had some incredible responses from customers whereby they said, thank you so much. No one has actually sent this kind of stuff. And awesome. I think it can go two ways. The one way is they can say thank you and, you know, it's a good thing that you've done. But the other way is you can say something maybe that someone doesn't agree with. And I think that is the whole call it risk of being vulnerable, is that you can open yourself up to being hurt. But at that time, I just stuck with my instinct and remained vulnerable and open and transparent. And to this day, even though we've had to commence the liquidation process of the company, and all of us, including Chase and myself, are retrenched, all of our team members have still stuck on the same WhatsApp group, still wish each other happy birthday when everyone has their birthdays. And more than half of our team members have found employment because all of us have been looking out for each other and trying to refer people to other businesses and doing our best to help each other. And yes, not everyone is employed, but we're going to continue this because it's not just a contract. It's not a transaction. It's a relationship. And we need to make sure, like I said, we do this to the best of our abilities.
But I think that, like, I actually made a note here. One thing that kind of, everything that you're saying, it kind of like hit me like a ton of bricks. And I think going through this pandemic, one thing that I've picked up with a lot of friends and family members that I speak to that have negatively been impacted by COVID, whether it's not getting a salary, whether it's kind of the company just says to you, we don't know what to do, we don't have money, and then you kind of have to fend for yourself. The biggest thing is, and the note that I made at the end here, is uncertainty requires transparency. And I think that's one thing I can really commend you guys for in terms of like the leadership style that you guys have, is actually one thing that you said there is, as a CEO, you've got a responsibility to your team. You've got a responsibility to let your team know exactly what's happening, because at the end of the day, the message that they're picking up, not necessarily from you, could be 10 times worse. And like, I really commend you for that transparency through the uncertainty to say, well, listen, guys, this is where we're at. I actually don't know what to do right now, but let's as a team sit together and figure out a plan. And I think, you know, like you said, there is a risk of being vulnerable, but like my comment or my observation, if I can call it that, is that leaders today don't want to be vulnerable. They don't want to be transparent because, you know, you almost want this airy fairy social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram type of lifestyle where, you know, they see you, for example, again, going through like the Instagram, one oak might pop it up and be like, oh, cool, so you've got your own company, you fly to Japan, you watch the Rugby World Cup. But it's not about that. And there's transparency in the process. And I think, again, like I said, I mean, I really commend you guys for that type of leadership style. And it definitely goes to show, you know, the fact that you guys are actively saying to the team, guys, we're in a really bad position. You know, yes, we need to face reality that we're actually liquidating the company, the company, and unfortunately, you guys are going to lose your job. In my mind, a lot of companies will be like, great, and the oak moves on. But the fact that you guys have taken responsibility and actually trying to find employment for your team, I think, you know, that that creates a culture which you cannot read a book about. You can't study that type of thing. Like that's something that's like inbuilt. And you've got friends and family for life through that process, because if people, and I, you know, that's, again, we can chat about that a bit later, but I think the impact of that will be is that you almost going to have a referral network of your whole staff for the rest of life, because whichever company or customer they go to and your name maybe pops up in a boardroom and they say, cool, we've got two companies. I've got Grant on this hand and I've got, you know, person Y on the other hand. You're always going to win, because that person's going to say, well, Grant's the safest choice. He's completely transparent. We trust him, you know?
Yeah, definitely. And I think, Grant, this is unfortunately is our episode done and that's time up. But we're going to invite Grant back for an episode 2. He's going to tell us a little bit more about the comeback, where we see Grant today. We just like to say thanks, Grant. Thanks for being on this episode. Thanks again for just explaining to us how you've gone through the COVID. But just for us to end off, Grant, we're going to end off with one final thought. What is the biggest lesson that you felt this COVID taught you?
What is the biggest lesson? Wow, okay. Everyone knows that this isn't scripted, because I'm hesitating here. The biggest lesson for me, if I think and I reflect on this, is that you need to rely on the people closest to you without shame. It is fine to ask for help, and it is fine not to not know the answer. And the sooner you ask someone for help, or the sooner you share with someone your current situation or your challenge, the sooner you actually will be in a far better, stronger position. Because my belief is that our purpose, whether it doesn't matter where you're from, is we all want to belong. We all want to feel part of something, and a network, and that just solidifies that. And so that's what I would say my biggest learning is: stick with the support network, stick with the people that you trust, and ask for help.
Cool.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Grant. We'll chat to you soon.
Great. Cheers, everyone.
Cheers.